You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. Since 2009, HRN podcasts have been exploring the wide world of food, beverage, and agriculture. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at hearstranch.com.
Hola familia, welcome to a new season, season four of Cooking in Mexican from A to Z. I'm one of your hosts, Tyrone Sanchez, alongside my beautiful mother,
Sarela Martinez.
And my mom and I have been reading emails and listening to all of you dedicated listeners, and we have answered the call because we're going to kick off this very exciting season four. And by the way, we are very much appreciative for your consistent support and listening and interest in Mexican ingredients, cooking techniques, and cultural aspects. We are really excited about that. Hopefully you guys have enjoyed having all that was wonderful, extremely talented and knowledgeable guests that we've had in the prior three seasons. We all want you to know that my mother and I are constantly trying to find new people to educate us as well as you about the beautiful wonder of the plethora and cornucopia of Mexican ingredients. So here we are. Mom, I think we have a really beautiful subject matter that we're going to tackle today, which is something that a lot of people have a strong opinions about and absolutely love, which is tamales.
Yeah, of course. You know, like I always say, el que nació pa tamal, del cielo le caen las hojas. And you and I are one of those lucky people that were born to be a tamal, and corn husks and all other kinds of leaves have fallen to the ground, and we have used them to fill all kinds of wonderful tamales.
Absolutely, Mom. And you know, let's if we want to start, Mom, let's talk a little bit about what the definition of a tamal is, or is it tamale or tamales?
Well,
there's a little bit of misunderstanding as far as how they're pronounced and how they're spelled. Because if you go to certain places in Central America and South America, it's just simply tamal without the E.
So, well, that's the way it is in Mexico, too. But, you know, mm-hmm. since we're living in a bicultural, bilingual country, everybody says tamale pie, mm-hmm. tamale. And so, you know, when you're writing about it, most people will put tamale, because if you put tamal, people don't know what you're talking about. But
exactly.
What we're talking about is samasa, either plain, well, always, not always, well, I've changed the definition to the masa situation. Mm-hmm. You should be lard, corn masa, and salt. And then you beat it until it's so light that it'll float on a glass of cold water. Mm-hmm. You can do this in the mixer, or you can do at the ranch, they used to do it with their hands, like this, lifting the masa up. But it can mm-hmm. only be one person that touches the masa, because if it's more than one person, it turns sour, or so they say.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, so they say.
But I think it's important to also mention it. Now, this is another very sort of interesting point. It has to be ground masa or ground, you know, mixed tamale.
Or cracked for the sagawil, but we'll talk about that later.
Yes, absolutely.
But it should be ground coarse.
Not
like tortillas.
Exactly. And just to answer that, if you look at all the great companies that bring masarina or corn flour to the States, Maseca being one of them, but they now have started, because the demand and popularity of tamales has grown so much, that they make a specific grind just for tamales.
Well,
a coarser grind, like you said, Mom.
Yeah, let's just define masarina.
Yes.
Masarina is dehydrated corn masa. Mm-hmm. It can either be fine ground for tortillas or coarsely ground for tamales. And then you reconstitute it. Most people reconstitute it with water. I prefer to reconstitute it with chicken stock so that it has an extra layer of flavor. But things are changing so much right now that you go to many supermarkets, particularly in California, even here in New York, they're starting to come, where you can go get real masa, just fresh masa by the pound. Mm-hmm. So tamal making is about to be totally revolutionized, because now, especially in New York, and I understand in many other places in the country, chefs are using native corn, which is mm-hmm. totally different from the corn that we use here in the United States, which is flint corn, which is very hard corn.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes it, you know, so what you want is a certain kind of corn that'll be fluffy when you cook it. So, you know, the recipe is 3 parts of masa to 1 pound of lard. And you might say
And I always put 2 cups of... I go 3 to 4 mom of masa, depending. 1 cup of lard and 2 cups of broth. That's the recipe I use. And that's okay. Off of you.
No.
Usually it's proven perfect every time.
No, that's perfect. I'm happy about that. But the way that I would like people to follow, and I'll tell you why, is 1 pound lard, but it has to be home rendered. You know, if possible. And then 3 pounds of masa. And people say, oh my God, that's a lot of lard. But what happens, because it's going to be, you know, beaten so hard, and lard has very thick, big crystals. When you steam it, all of the fat comes out, or most of it comes out into the water, the steaming water, and you're left with this wonderful, fluffy, delicious dough that is either filled or unfilled. What do you prefer to fill your tamales with?
Well, let's just talk really quick before we get into the fillings and how we do it, Mom, but I think it's important. There's many different styles of tamales. I think we need to say that just out there, because I have traveled a lot in Latin America and seen different versions of it. Obviously, we're talking about the Mexican style, the Mexican version of the wonderful tamal. But, you know, we're talking about lard, which is essential to how we grew up and what is traditionally Mexican. But the question some of our listeners might have, can you not use lard? You know, can you use another kind of fat? I think that's important, a question to mention as well.
Well, you cannot use oil because you know, the problem is the crystals that I tell you that the fat is composed of. You know, if you use home rendered lard, it's 2/3 unsaturated, and butter is 50% saturated. So if you, for health reasons, you don't want to use lard, butter is much worse. You know, because that's 50% saturated, and it doesn't come out as much in the steaming. I mean, it might be good for some tamales, but not good for everything.
Yes. I mean, if you wanted to do be creative and do a chocolate tamal and then, you know, do it that, maybe butter might work for that application. But what does the lard do, the manteca do to the actual masa? It kind of brings it together. It unifies it. It gives it that necessary element that binds it, that almost puts it together. Right, Mom?
Yeah, it does, and it's and also it adds a lot of flavor.
It almost activates the starch. It kind of works in this very interesting medium to give it moisture, to give it flavor, and it's sort of like the catalyst for the texture.
Yeah, absolutely, because I tell you, it has very big crystals,
and that
allows much more air to come in and make the dough fluffier. Now, of course, some people in Mexico, for instance, will use other, like something like tequesquite or tomatillo leaves, you know, mix it with tomatillo, a tea made with tomatillo leaves, which also makes it a lot fluffier.
Yeah.
So
there's other things you can add to the actual masa to give it some more body and some lightness, correct?
Tequesquite is the number one thing, the traditional thing. But like I tell you, you can also use the leaves of your tomatillos. The husks, make a tea and use that as your liquid.
Yes. Okay.
You have this
now,
liquid.
So we talked about masa, how to get it. Now let's talk about the wrapping, shall we, before we get into
the
fillings?
That's a wonderful subject.
Yeah, let's talk about, so now we have our masa, okay, for everyone listening. We talked about the different variations, the coarseness, the importance of manteca, which is essential. Now let's talk about wrapping, shall we?
Yeah. The traditional one. Yeah,
is the actual, it's the corn husk, right?
The dried
corn husk.
Because there's some tamales that you use the green one. You know, like tamales de elote. You know, sometimes you use the leaf of the tamale, you know, for tamales de amarillo in Oaxaca.
You use the leaves, and sometimes you use the, you know, like uchepos, for instance. I've seen uchepos in Michoacán with green corn leaves.
And fold it a certain way.
They fold a certain way. The times I've seen them in Michoacán, they've been used green. And then if you go down to Chiapas, Quintana Roo, the Yucatan, you're going to see banana leaves at time, right, Mom?
Well, actually, everywhere in Oaxaca.
Everywhere, yeah.
Those are the two major things. You know, Jane Siegel, who went with me to Oaxaca the last time that I was thinking of moving there recently, is now doing a study program at Criollo, this amazing restaurant in Oaxaca. Mm-hmm. And they had this tamales that they're putting on top of avocado leaves, mm-hmm. which I had had. You know, avocado leaves are anise scented, mm-hmm. so they have a whole other flavor. I had had them in a very different way, but between just the two leaves of the avocado and steamed. But this was a wrapped in a certain way that that you put beans on the avocado leaf, and then the masa, and then you start rolling them. I have a recipe for them in my Veracruz book. It's called Tamales de Capita. So you mm-hmm. on the banana leaf, you put the masa, then you put the frijoles on top of the hojas of the avocado leaf, and start rolling them into like a jelly roll, and then you cut them. And then you have this, and tie them, and you have this little beautiful little round presence of masa with beans inside of it.
Cool. So we talked about wrappings. Now we have the masa, we have the wrappings. There's different styles of wrapping tamales, yeah. which is interesting. I think the more traditional route is the little masa kind of folded over both sides, and then the bottom end is kind of folded up. And then you want to kind of leave, I'd say, about an inch and a half of space on top to really allow the steam and the moisture to kind of get in there and cook them evenly. So you don't want to overfill your tamales. I think that's important to mention. One of the things we do when we do them at the restaurant is we lay out all of our rehydrated corn husks, dried corn husks, and then we use ice cream scoopers. So well,
that's
that means,
a great idea.
Yeah, so we have 4 ounces or whatever it is, 6 ounces, depending on what we're doing with them. And that way we have the consistent amount of masa for every tamale.
Yeah, that's very good.
And it helps us keep consistency.
That's for the restaurant thing. But mm-hmm. normally at the rancho, we used to make tamales. All the women would come around to the house, and one person would be in charge of the leaf, you know, drying it because it's been soaking of the corn husk. Then the other
you mean reconstituting them?
Reconstituting
them,
yeah. Then the other person would be in charge of spreading the masa, and you usually start by in the middle of the leaf towards the wide side. You know, and then you decide how fat or how thin you want them, you know. But people always say, how come you're putting the masa so thinly? Well, I like the masa to be thinner, but a lot of people want a lot of masa, so you have to know what people like there. Then the
That's a good point, Mom, because you want a lot of people value the filling more than the masa at times, right?
Yeah. But, you know, they're tamales that don't have anything in the masa. You know,
they might have
a few seeds, you know, that you can use as a side dish, let's say.
Yes.
Or, for instance, you know, you can mix in corn and poblanos and cheese and directly into the masa and just put that in the middle of the husk and in a little ball and roll it. And you have this delicious little packet of corn crunchy corn.
So what we do at Johnny Sanchez, which is in New Orleans, and I hope everyone has an opportunity to come down and visit with us. But I do that also with my sopes. I do this with my sopes. I do it with our tamales. Is we actually take some roasted corn, especially when in season, and fold that into our masa to
you
give a little textural pop of sweetness.
Yeah, I love that.
So we do that with our sope mixtures, and we do it with our tamal, and it really makes a big difference. So let's talk about some of the traditional fillings, right, Mom? Because I think it's important to mention, you talked about probably the one that people, you know, I think one of the maybe top three proper ones, which is poblano, rajas with cheese, right?
Exactly.
Which is roasted poblano, onions, and then a nice little sort of spear of cheese. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other ones. Because sometimes when you go to a traditional place, you have a beef, chicken, pork, and
done in regional style. For instance, if you're in Veracruz, in Oaxaca, you usually go with mole negro or any different kind of mole, you know, because they all taste a little bit different. Some are sweeter, some are, you know, have nuts. You could do it with pipián. You could do it with just about anything you want.
This episode is supported by HRN business member ClearCogs, as in cost of goods sold. ClearCogs saves restaurants money by providing daily food prep forecasting to help reduce food waste. Using historic restaurant transaction data and custom machine learning models, ClearCogs predicts how much of each ingredient or menu item needs to be prepped on each day. To learn more, visit clearcogs.com. That's clear, CLEARCOGS.com. ClearCogs supports HRN's creative, educational reporting and storytelling that drive conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
Before we totally get into the fillings, let's talk, I forgot about to mention two other wonderful leaves to wrap in. In Yucatan, they use chaya, which is a green leaf similar to hoja santa, which is another leaf that's used to wrap tamales in Oaxaca, you know, when they use the mole or nar. You know, you put the masa, then you put the hoja santa, then you put the mole on the top and wrap it, and you have this wonderful anise flavor. And then the chaya, the tamal is called brazo de reina in Yucatan. And that was kind of like a real herbal kind of flavor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. I mean, again, there's nothing to say that you can't add additional flavoring, another element inside the actual wrapping to
absolutely
really sort of add a punch of flavor, right?
Or
in the masa. Yeah, and so it's not just as simple as just straight having your straight masa or your dough and then putting a filling in. You can augment that, and that is something that's regional. It's something that really depends on, again, on what the style of the tamal is. So that's a good idea, Mom.
Have you had the chipil tamales in Oaxaca?
Yes, I've had the chipil. Chipil, which is this kind of wild sort of herb. I mean, they're very well known for the sopa de chipil, you know, in Teotitlán del Valle, where they put sometimes they put in squash blossoms in there as well, that I've had it. But the chipil, Mom, they make the tamal de chipil. And how would you describe chipil?
It's a grassy flavor.
Yeah, it kind of tastes a little bit like purslane. I've had that kind of flavor, but not so much.
More like a pasote, kind of.
Yeah, more like a pasote, yeah.
It's kind of at the beginning, you have to get used to it. But you know what they also do? Let's say that you have over some leftover tamales de chipil. What they do is that they cut them in slices, put them in a casserole, put crema and cheese on top of it, and bake it as a casserole.
Oh, that's smart.
Yeah.
That's smart.
So
I like
you can
that.
Do that with any leftover tamales that you have.
There you go. That's a good tip. So let's talk a little bit about fillings, right? We know that if you go to some sort of Tex-Mex or kind of run-of-the-mill Mexican restaurant, at times you'll be asked or you'll see on the menu, do you want pork, chicken, beef, or rajas, you know, rajas with, you know, with cheese, tamales. So those are kind of the more generic ones that you would see. But there, like you said, Mom, there really is no rules as far as your fillings. But ideally, it has to be a filling that is slow braised. So, because you're not necessarily, and flavorful. You're not cooking it in the tamal. You're sort of reheating it and allowing that filling to impart flavor to the masa.
Exactly.
So it has to be usually a slow braise that's very saucy and loaded with flavor would be ideal to fill your tamal.
And, you know, let's say that you're doing chile colorado. A lot of black people like to take some of the chile colorado from the meat and mix it into the masa. So then you have like another flavor, another layer of flavor.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like red tamales. You know, during Christmas, you know, tamales are particularly related to Christmas. And it's like, you know, one time Tia Lisa's brother came into the restaurant and he said, near Christmas, and he said, have you made your tamales? Because to a Mexican, it's like to an American would be, have you put up your Christmas tree? It's very important. But there are specific tamales that we have made at the house for Christmas, which are my grandmother's tamales. They weren't my favorite because I don't like the combination of golden raisins and olives. But they have chicken and then they have chile verde. I've gotten to like them, and actually I have the recipe in Food from My Heart. But it's a really traditional tamal in Sonora only.
Yeah, you know, and look, there's a certain convenience of having a tamal. I mean, one could say that you can they're easily portable. You know, if you go to the north of Mexico, you have burritos, right? And the burros are just the meat and the braised wrapped in a flour tortilla, and they're easy to transfer, and it's something that's ideal. A tamal, you can argue, could be that as well. All you need to simply do is kind of reheat it, but they're at their optimum when they're fresh off the steamer and they're ready to rock and roll. There's nothing more magical than that. One other way that I kind of, we've kind of taken this upon ourselves is at the, you know, we do events and things like that. We like to put the tamal as the base, almost like a polenta would be for an Italian, right?
Exactly.
So we would just steam a tamal, and then we put a beautiful wild mushroom sort of ragu on top, or we would do a lobster veracruzana on top of the actual tamal and let that be the canvas. So you can
that's
also do that
idea
as well.
And that's it could be a side dish.
Yeah.
You know, because in pre-Hispanic times, they used to serve it with mole. They used to serve the mole in platters with no rims, just a rim, but no handles, and offer the mole in one hand, and in the other hand offer tortillas and tamales. Mm-hmm. To be dipped into the mole, because the mole, the dish was the sauce.
Yeah.
So I think that's a very good idea of yours. But there are tamales that you use just the masa, you know, like, for instance, one of my favorite Veracruzan tamales, besides the sacahuil, which we will talk about just in a second, is tamales de masa cocida, where the masa is you mix it with liquid lard and stir it like polenta. Until it starts separating from the sides of the pot and the little crusty things start to form. You take that, you put it in a casserole. That's the original tamal pie. Or you can put it in a banana leaf with, I'd like to do some sort. And it's the most glorious flavor you can imagine. The masa's already cooked. It takes a little bit of time just to steam them. And you cannot imagine how delicious. And when you make the casserole, you make it in two layers. And then you bake it, you know, and it's crunchy and delicious on the top.
That's a lovely segue, Mom. That's a lovely segue. Okay, so the traditional way, I mean, look, the steaming, you know, you go into supermarkets now, even mainstream general market, we call gringo mercados, are selling tamaleras. They're selling pots that have a perforated sort of layer on the bottom or a rack that you can actually assemble your tamales in and steam them and do all of that.
Like the ones that you have
in my now defunct line. Yes, thanks for bringing that up, Mom. I love it.
Well, I know, but you know what? Somebody just wrote to me and said that they love your tamal pots, that they had one in yellow and one in red.
Thank you. They were great. And it's something that's very beloved. And, you know, and something cool about being Mexican is that, you know, you mentioned Christmas, Mom, right? And I think another reason that they're very popular, especially Mexicans, embrace that because it's something that the whole family can do, right? Like you just mentioned.
And we don't do it for everything.
Yeah. And somebody, and you know, one child can be the one that lays out the leaves. Somebody's in charge of the masa. Somebody's in charge of assembling them in the actual tamalera. So it's a really family-oriented thing. That's why I think it's so beautiful for Christmas.
Yeah.
And I just love that tradition of having that your big tamale pot in the garage or wherever in the back, and then you know it's time for the holidays when you bring that out, you know?
Exactly.
And it's kind of like
so romantic.
Yeah, and it's kind of like here in Louisiana where I live, where it's time to make gumbo. Like everybody has this beautiful big brazier or big Dutch oven that they only bring out when it's a holiday to make gumbo. So I think it's really beautiful, and that's kind of our way of doing it, so.
Well, you know, tamales are used for every occasion,
yeah.
Particularly wakes. You know,
there's
the wakes and weddings. But, you know, there's like the story about the man who's dying over there, and he calls his grandson and says, is that your grandmother's tamales? Tell her to give me one. And he comes back and says, she says no because there's not enough for the wake tomorrow.
Totally. So, yeah. And you know what? And it's tamales, and for everybody that hasn't made them or is wondering, are they challenging to make? No, they're not. And like they're my not. Mom said, if you go to Mercados, anywhere in California, for instance, for all our fans and people that are supporting us from there, you know, you can go into a Puerto Vallarta store, you can go into many different stores and buy fresh masa every day. So the convenience factor is definitely there. There's no reasons you shouldn't do it. You can actually buy the braises already done. I mean, it's simple as pie. But one thing that's important to mention is it's like mole. You would never make 2 quarts of mole. And everything with tamales, you wouldn't just make a dozen. You got to make 4, 5 dozen. If you're going to go through all that trouble, you want to make sure you make a bunch. They freeze really well.
I'd like to freeze them raw because then when you get ready to steam them, you just add a little bit longer.
Yeah. So that's the deal. Don't make a couple, make a bunch and have them and enjoy that. Okay?
Exactly.
Good.
So now we come have to talk about the sacahuil.
Okay, so the sacahuil. So I just kind of got off on a little tangent. We talk about the cooking method, right? Which is traditionally steaming, but there's other ways you can do them, right, Mom? And the sacahuil is a very interesting technique that it's used and done with. So can you talk a little bit about the sacahuil?
There are two versions.
Yes.
One of them is made in a pot, and that's from the Huasteca near like Lake Tamiahua. And then the other one is from the Huasteca up there. It's a tamal that's about 6 feet long.
In what state, Mom?
It's
Veracruz.
Veracruz, and what's yes. above Zacatecas, whatever is next. Anyway, the Monterrey down there. Anyway, so what I love about the sacahuil is that every part of the plant is used. They take the trunk of the banana plant and they cut it in half, and then they lay it in such a way that it forms like a little basket, like a trough, actually, frankly. Then you cover that with lots and lots and lots of banana leaves. Then you make this masa, where the masa is not ground. It's cracked like to the size of small rice.
Mm-hmm.
And you mix that up with this mix that you have made with chicken stock or some other really flavorful stock.
Mm-hmm.
And then the chile colorado or whatever adobo you decide to make. Usually it's some sort of chile colorado. Then you put like big hunks of meat, like pork butt, a whole chicken, a whole duck, whatever you want in this thing. And then you add the masa to cover, and then you roll it up very, very tightly, tie it up with the strings of the banana leaf, and put it in an oven for 12 hours. What they do there in the Huasteca is when the bakers have finished cooking their bread for the day, people bring the sacahuiles and they put them in the oven and they're there till the morning. And then in the morning, you can go have that for breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
But you can't do that. Most people cannot make a true sacahuil here unless you happen to have an outside oven and a huge stove. But you can make a tamal de olla. But you do exactly the same thing. You know, you make the masa with the cracked corn, with the salsa, with the melted lard. And then you put it in a pot lined with a lot of banana leaves. Put the whole chicken, the big hunk of pork, whatever you want to fill it with. Covered really tightly with banana leaves and put it in a 250 or 275 oven for 8 hours. And then it comes out and you cannot imagine that smell and that flavor. It's like a porridge. It's this most wonderful thing.
Yeah. And I get, for all those that are listening, if you have like a pizza oven, for instance, right?
Oh, that's
fantastic. Which a lot of people have. That's a perfect application to put the sacahuil in. You know, you put sort of the embers in there, you cover it, you cover the lid of your pizza oven and let it go overnight or whatever. And I think it'd come out magical. And also, who's to say you couldn't put it in a smoker for all of our barbecue people out there?
I don't know.
In a smoker, you can keep large things cooking for an extended amount of time. And I think that might be a good way to also impart some flavor.
I have to ask my niece because they do that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Isabel and Felix do that. They put it in the smoker.
Yeah.
You know, I like anything smoked.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's why I brought it up, Mom. that's why I brought it up. Because, You know, we're trying to make the world of tamales accessible to as many people as we can.
Well, let's talk about dessert tamales.
Dessert tamales, okay. We can talk about that. Yeah. Look, they're not as common. I think sometimes they're looked upon as sort of a little bit of a novelty thing.
Yeah, but they're not.
But I know, but talking about regions and where you can find sweet tamales, it's not something a lot of people, I think, gravitate personally.
The pineapple ones that Raquel makes in Veracruz are fantastic.
Well, yes, Mom, but they're not something that I think a lot of people associate. But you're right, they do exist and they are popular, okay? Yeah. Let's talk. So pineapple.
At the ranch.
Can you go as far as put chocolate with your masa? Absolutely.
I guess you could. Why not? Chocolate absolutely. Goes with everything. The ones that we made at the ranch had anise seed and those pink pine nuts. Mm-hmm. You know, they are just to die. I mean, they're just so fantastic that you can imagine. I'll have to make them soon.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Yeah, I mean, look, if you wanted to make a sweet tamale, just things that are coming up to me right now, you know, you can soak fruit in sort of a mezcal sugary substance, almost like a syrup. Let that be part of a filling as well. That's totally possible. You can kind of play with the dry fruit cheese element, almost like a cheese course, kind of combined in with dessert. There's many ways you can do it. But I think, yeah, you're right. I think it's become something that people don't necessarily do all the time. I've done chocolate tamales before, and they've come out great.
When I went to Oaxaca this last time, I ate them at this most extraordinary restaurant called Levadura de Olla. Mm-hmm. And one of the courses were these tamales and banana leaves. They had no fat in them. It was a vegetarian place. And they had mixed the dough so much, you know, just, I guess, with salt or something, and maybe tomatillo or the mezquite, and then it was just laid on the banana leaves and steamed, you know, with the masa, you know, with some sort of filling, like I think it was chile rajas. And then the tamal just comes out in this delicious little crust. Mm. I mean, it's not fluffy like the other one, but it's so succulent because it has all the oils of the banana leaf, and then it has the chili. It was so amazing. So if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, you can still make tamales.
Absolutely. We're not insisting upon having lard in your tamales. So please, you know, be aware of that. And there's ways of doing it. And if you have any comments and questions, please make sure that you do that, because at HRN, we are very much aware of taking good care of you guys and answering all the questions you have. You have to use not just my mom and I as a resource, but all of the wonderful podcasts that Heritage Radio Network has broadcasting. So we really, really want you to kind of engage with us. And if you have anything that we haven't covered or any questions, please, the conversation doesn't end here. Okay?
This, you know, like I forgot to say one thing. You know, they say you can fill the tamales with anything, but not with chivo, which is goat.
Yeah.
Because when they say that somebody went out on you, somebody was on Facebook, they said, te hicieron de chivo los tamales.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
They make your tamales with chivo, with goat.
Yeah, absolutely. It's part of a saying. Absolutely.
I love the way you host this program, honey. You're so professional. I'm so proud of you. You keep me in order. My mind in order. I think that we did cover a lot of stuff. You know, I think this tamales is an endless subject.
I agree, and I think we just scraped the surface, to be honest. Hopefully we can come back and maybe dive a little bit deeper as far as maybe a regional look at some of the, you know, places in Mexico that we brought up Veracruz. I'm sure we can do a whole episode just on tamales in Veracruz.
Chiapas is known for the tamales.
Chiapas is known especially. I mean, even Michoacán for the most part. I mean, you know, they have a beautiful culture of tamales there as well. So
in Chiapas, every afternoon at 5 in Corzo, Chiapa de Corzo, you know where the entrance to that beautiful canyon, the Sumidero, is? Mm-hmm. Women come at 5 o'clock and bring up to 20 different kinds of tamales. Mm-hmm. It's worth a trip to Chiapas just to do that. They have tamales that are the size of a finger. They're called tamales reales, to all sorts of flavors and everything. So that's, we have to make maybe a study of that, because there's not that much to talk about Chiapas food.
I'm going to make a little trip, Mom, and we'll get to the bottom of this mystery.
Okay.
Well, you know, since we're coming concluding to this wonderful episode and beginning of our wonderful season 4 of Cooking in Mexican from A to Z and, of course, on Heritage Radio Network, let's talk a little bit about some projects you're currently working on, Mom, so everyone that's listening can kind of get into a way to support that. So what do you have going on?
Well, what I'm working on is a new book based on one of my classic techniques of building blocks. And it's going to have like hints about what to do in the kitchen. I'm going to steal some of your ideas, dehydrating the remains of the mole and using that as a seasoning. And I want people to send me their shortcuts for stuff. It's gonna be really, really cool. You know, it's gonna have all sorts of techniques for cooking to make it easy for you. So that's what I'm working on. I dedicate my life to this podcast that means so much to me, and that I thank HRN for having us do it, because it allows me to learn so much from the people who we have on here, and just doing the research, you know, which is so much fun for me to remember everything. And I'm happy that I still remember a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And then I'm working on a big birthday celebration at the ranch.
Yes, exactly. We talked about it when we saw each other this past week, which was a lovely visit that we have. You know, sadly, I live in New Orleans, you live in New York, so we don't have a chance to see each other as much as we would like to, but yes.
Well, how about you? You have so much stuff going on. I don't know how you stand doing so many different things.
No, right now, the thing I'm most excited about right now is that I've merged with our dear friend, Emeril Lagasse, Mom. My foundation is merged with him. And now, you know, the last 4 years, we've been calling it the Aaron Sanchez Scholarship Fund. Now we're changing our focus to the Aaron Sanchez Impact Fund, which opens up our help and our aid to many different kinds of pockets of Latinos around the country. So we're going to start to be able to extend scholarships to migrant farm workers' children, to at-risk kids, to military children. So all this, so we're going to start to really open this up and perhaps start to have seed money for different businesses, which I think would be really great as well. But here we are. So yeah, a lot of fun stuff coming down the road, and you know, who knows? I think I'm getting very close to doing a tequila, which I'm very excited about. I just came back from Guadalajara last week, and I had a really great experience down there, and I forget how magical Jalisco is, and it's just it's one of the most emblematic states of Mexico. I think, you know, it's the birthplace of tequila, mariachi, of all these different elements that are so associated with Mexican culture, and it's just, when you go there, and Mom, you went to school in Guadalajara, so
I went to the university there, and I went to finishing school there.
Yeah, it's a magical place. So, and everyone's so beautiful there too. Oh, it's just me.
And tall.
And tall. Exactly. Well, I hope everyone's enjoyed this deep dive into tamales. I know it's not easy to maybe talk about all the different styles and varietals, and I don't want to. And I also want to make sure that, you know, we are aware of all the different styles of tamales in Latin America. All my Venezuelans with the ayacas, all my gente in Colombia, everybody in Central America who has their own versions of tamales, we are aware of them. If you go to Puerto Rico, they make pasteles. You know, there's Cuban tamales. I mean, there's so much out there to be embraced in this particular sort of genre of Latin cooking. So we do love them. We do support it. We just, you know, right now our focus is on Mexican style tamales. So,
and I think we discussed today what they are, mm-hmm. how to make it, how to make the basic masa, mm-hmm. and from there on, and the what type of fillings and wrappings, and from there on we can develop, because we showed them how to do the basic technique, I think.
I agree, Mom. Like, oh, one thing we didn't talk about: how long do you steam them?
Oh.
I like, and I think that's an important part, because you don't want to oversteam or understeam. So I just want to let everybody know, this is what I do. Okay, you can tell me different, but I'm a 30 minute to 45 minute, depending on the heat, for my tamales. That's where I like to keep.
I agree.
30 to 45 minutes, depending on the size, obviously. And then hold them. I like to put a wet towel over mine, or a wet rag over mine, and hold them like
that.
And
you know how you can tell if they're done? You take out a tamal, and if the dough separates a little bit from the husk, they're done.
Yes, exactly.
It's a very good point, baby. And like we say, este arroz ya se coció, and these tamales are all cooked. And yeah. It's been a pleasure to be with you again, baby. If I don't see you here, I can't see you that often.
Don't worry. We're going to be coming up with some beautiful episodes this season. Season 4 of Cooking in Mexico from A to Z on Heritage Radio Network. I want everybody to stay tuned. We have a really beautiful roster of guests that are going to be coming down shortly to share with all of you their wonderful knowledge of Mexican ingredients, cooking, techniques, culture, and personal stories, obviously. So all of that's going to be included in this wonderful season. So we are very grateful for your continued support, for allowing us to have another season. So we thank you from the bottom of our hearts. Muchísimas gracias. Es un honor estar aquí con ustedes. Hasta luego.
Cooking in Mexican from A to Z is powered by Simple Cast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without your support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like. Tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. En mis entrañas.